Peter's on the way with Strictly Confidential. We got to make room for him.
Okay. Well, listen, man, I love you guys. I'll give a listen and get in on you tonight. All right.
We'll be right here.
And have a great couple hours. Tell Peter. Well, Peter, you're listening, I'm sure. Love you, man. And I love all of you guys. And have a great evening.
All right. Take care, Bruce.
Okay.
Later.
Bye.
And that, of course, is our dear buddy, Bruce Birch. It is time for Strictly Confidential, which means it's time for me to get out of here, and I am run up against it. So thank you to everyone. Thank you especially to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks down at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, working every day tirelessly to save not only the Appalachian region from mountaintop removal, but the entire country. You can be a part of the solution by going to crmw.net and joining. Please do so. You will be glad you did. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow evening. The broadcast day is far from over. Coming up next, Strictly Confidential with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. After that, as mentioned, the horn section. Might even hear from Brother Bruce. And following that, All Foxed Up with John Fox. We'll round out the broadcast day. Lots of fun coming yet. And always... always, always. RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 141 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and our straight allies. Strictly Confidential is found exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Yeah.
around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 142 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and our straight allies. The mainstream media told me to say that. Strictly Confidential is found exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net. Stop by Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net and have a look at what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today being Wednesday, May 7, 2008. So if you're listening at about 9.02 p.m. Eastern Time, on a Wednesday evening, May 7, 2008, you're listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call in and participate. I'll be giving out the phone numbers and email addresses in just a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from past shows. Then you'll find links there to the chat room. It's a good night to stop by the chat room. Just stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the chat link, and you'll be taken to the chat registration where you decide what username you'd like, and just that simple, you get to log in, and you'll find some of the smartest and funniest people on the planet. And indeed, it was a riot this evening when Bob Kincaid, well, let me just say, if you missed the Bob Kincaid show this evening, stop by White Rose Society and have a listen to the archive. It was a treat. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com for the Strictly Confidential MySpace page. You'll find links there also to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. And you're going to find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site. That's headonradionetwork.com, of which I am a small part. There you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. And there is a PayPal button there as well, to make it easy for you to support the Head On Radio Network, to keep the packets passing and the network cards interfacing and the hard drives spinning and the floppies flopping and the keyboards typing and the monitors shining in the dark wee hours of a West Virginia night. Those of you who are new to the Head On Radio Network may know that I'm in Tallahassee. You can tell that from my website, but what you may not know is we're far flung. The studio is located in West Virginia. We have guests and further south of Florida, we have guests and hosts, the correct word. Hosts, in South Florida and Washington, D.C. and Australia, and Bob originates his show out of the studio in West Virginia. And there are others far flung as well. And it is through the magic of the Internet that this program comes together. And we are delighted to be a part of the Head On Radio Network. The telephone number, if you'd like to participate, is toll-free. It's a Just Us show tonight, by the way. Just Us this evening. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. That translates into 877-443-2366. And that's toll-free, and we are more than happy to take your call. If you do have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. Either way, we welcome your call. The toll line is area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia, where Bob or Agnes will answer the phone and patch you right in. The email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's a long one, Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the mail during the break. So you have several ways to participate this evening. either by the chat room, which is the most fun way to participate, or you can call in, and that is actually just as fun as the chat room. And then there's email, which is Peter at Head-On Radio Network, which may not be as fun, but nonetheless, we're glad to hear from you. And we also welcome the listeners who are not able to listen live and listen to the program at another time that is more convenient for them. And we welcome you aboard also, and we appreciate your emails. Where do I begin? You know, last night was the huge presidential primary race, and the headlines and all the newscasts were predominantly about that one thing, but it was also a very remarkable night for two other very exciting events. In Falls Church, Virginia, voters elected Lawrence Webb to the city council, making him the state's first openly gay African-American elected official. I spoke with him today. Lawrence was a delightful man on the phone, and we are planning to have Lawrence on the show very soon. Tonight he is in a series of meetings. Could not join us this evening, but he'll be contacting us over the next couple of days, or I back to him, and we will have him on soon. He ran a wonderful campaign and won by a large margin. Of course, he was supported and promoted by Victory Fund, and we've had Victory Fund on the show also, which is an organization that helps get LGBT folks into office. And as it turns out, it's pretty important to get into office, regardless of your position. An example is yesterday also in an Alabama election that you didn't hear about. Hang on to your seats. The House of Representatives in Alabama yesterday passed a bill adding sexual orientation to the state's hate crime laws. What a huge moment that had to be for the mothers and fathers of some of the brutally murdered victims there. It's pretty astonishing, really. There is a very important reason for this victory, and that was one vote, one person. You see, a Republican member who had become friends and is friends with Representative Patricia Todd, who's the legislature's sole openly gay member. Well, a Republican had become friends with her. Because of that friendship, he crossed party lines to vote with the Democrats, and it passed the House of Representatives. Imagine that, a state hate crimes law in Alabama. Now, the bill may not get through the Senate this year, and one cannot deny, though, that the progress is undeniable and that having an openly LGBT legislator made a huge difference. Again, we'll be talking to Lawrence Webb from Falls Church, Virginia, in a show coming up soon. Also want to let you know that tomorrow night we have a remarkable guest I'm very much looking forward to. His name is Jim Burroway. Jim will be joining us at 9:30 tomorrow evening. The show will start at 9 as usual. Jim will join us at 9:30. You may not recognize the name Jim Burroway, but let me assure you that this program has used his website extensively. He is no doubt the most comprehensive and in-depth blogger or website that exists. Everything is in great detail and depth. He's the editor of Box Turtle Bulletin. That's the site I'm referring to. It's a site that's devoted to analyzing statements and scientific claims of ex-gay and anti-gay organizations. Let me give you some examples of news stories that we have borrowed from Jim, or started with Jim and went to various places with Watchmen on the Walls. We continued that conversation regarding the situation in Sacramento and the situation with Hutcherson in Seattle with the Microsoft board meeting. Another example of a show based on research done by Jim Burroway was the writing a gay or anti-gay tract. And was it 12 easy steps or was it 15 easy steps? That one's been a while back. If you remember, we covered how to where to locate the false research, how to plant the research, how to make it seem legitimate, how to talk about, you know, what was it, disease and famine and plagues and mostly disease. Anyway, we went through that in great detail, and it was indeed from that site that information came. In fact, that's only a sample of some of the stories that had their start by my reading Box Turtle Bulletin, and Jim Burroway is about the best in the business. Looking forward to having him on the show. I don't want you to miss it, and that will be tomorrow night. He will join us at 9:30. I've not spoken with him, but we have been emailing today back and forth. So it's all set, and I am looking forward to meeting him with you tomorrow night here on Strictly Confidential, the Head On Radio Network's LGBT conversation radio show. Lord have mercy. You know, that's a statement I've been saying a lot lately. Every day this whole situation just never ceases to amaze me. I thought this evening we might get into a little bit about John Hagee. Lord knows we've been through enough hearing about Reverend Wright, who is, of course, Obama's minister or ex-minister. Since the falling out, it's hard to know which. But one of the main differences, of course, is that Mr. Wright was sought out by the media. He was sought out intensely by the media in desperate hopes of finding something that would embarrass Obama. As you know, they have their hearts set, or had their hearts set, on having Hillary in the White House, or at least in the race, because the anti-Hillary machine has been fine-tuning for many, many, many years, and is down to a science. So the anti-Democratic candidate was all primed up for Hillary, and Lord knows they didn't want to have to rewrite it for Obama. But nonetheless, the mainstream media went after Wright in a huge way. I found examples of his past sermons, put him on television repeatedly, and there are various stories about how he ended up on the second television appearance, but it's not really here to go into that. Talked about it once in brief. Nonetheless, it has been quite a ride for Obama and Hagee, or rather Wright. Now, the difference with the John Hagee situation, we'll call him John Hagee or Hagee, is that John McCain, the Republican candidate, sought out his endorsement in the same way pretty much that a dog mounts another dog in heat. It was something that he did primarily because of Hagee's deep influence in right-wing Christianity. I'll be talking about the networks and radio stations and his connections in just a few moments. But to have Hagee endorse you was to have the vote of the Christian right. Although Hagee is somewhat controversial, he's also a multimillionaire made rich by televangelism and the Glory Hallelujah satellites like Sky Angel, etc., etc., etc. It brings to mind when we're talking about Huckabee, while Huckabee was still in the race. Do you remember how incredibly private his sermons became? Boy, I tell you, couldn't get a hold of one of his sermons from his Baptist church preaching days if your life depended on it. In fact, there were people who were called and contacted and beseeching them to give up their copies of videotapes of his sermons or audio tapes, and oh, we just don't have them anymore. The church was damaged in a twister, there are thousands of those tapes out there. But nonetheless, we were denied anything that Huckabee said in the pulpit. But we are not denied what Hagee has said in the pulpit. And I again remind you that the Republican candidate has sought and courted him very hard to get his endorsement. Hagee was the founder and the senior pastor of Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, Texas, which is a non-denominational, by the way, is code for fundamentalist, a non-denomination evangelical church, has more than 19,000 active members. The church is pretty much a major modern cathedral, something like the Crystal Palace from the Reverend What's-His-Face, but, you know,
the whole bit, multimedia, the immersion tank in the wall behind the pulpit so that you could see people being baptized in the tank that was embedded in the wall. In other words, part of the wall was glass so that you would see the water and the television camera, which zoomed in on the person being baptized and projected on the... Not that there's anything wrong with being baptized. I'm just saying it was theater. It was theater, my dear. He's also the CEO of a non-profit... Yeah, right. Wait till you hear the numbers. A non-profit corporation called Global Evangelism Television, or GETV. President and CEO of John Hagee Ministries. It telecasts nationally to internationally, and to radio television stations carried in the United States, 160 TV stations in the United States, 50 radio stations, 8 networks, including the Inspiration Network, Trinity Broadcasting, which I normally call the Big Hair Channel. The ministries can be seen and heard weekly in 99 million homes. John Hagee Ministries is also in Canada. And the Miracle Channel can be seen in Africa, in Europe, in Australia, in New Zealand, and in most third world nations. And I mentioned also he's the CEO of Global Evangelism Television. He is not a stranger to controversy. Indeed, he is extremely controversial, even amongst the evangelicals. But nonetheless, they fall in line behind him. By the way, I'm pointing out in the chat room that today at LGBT History, May the 7th, 1840, composer Peter Tchaikovsky was born. Wish we had a copy of the canons and the and it wouldn't surprise me if Bob didn't pull it out. But I've always enjoyed him. Thank you for pointing that out. And his comments have gotten him in a lot of trouble with even the evangelicals, and certainly with the Catholics. He's an anti-Catholic, anti-Islam, anti-homosexual, anti-women, anti-black, and the Bush administration didn't do anything wrong, Katrina guy. Or at least he believes that. He was born in Texas to a reverend and reverend's wife. In a little place called Baytown, Texas. I bet that was rough. He graduated from Trinity University with a Bachelor of Science, which I think we could call a BS degree, more ways than one. He did his theological training in the Southwestern Assembly of God University in Waxahachie, Texas. Now, I just assume that's one hell of a conservative place. He is from a long line of Anabaptist Mennonite pastors. His daddy's daddy and his daddy's daddy's daddy. Anyway, the Anabaptists, the primary belief there that separates them from the rest is that you cannot be, if you're baptized when you're a little bitty baby, either by sprinkling or dunking or whatever they do in your particular flavor, that is not good enough. You must be baptized when you're older and you know what you're doing, as opposed to being baptized as an infant. In any case, I don't know what you're supposed to do about the ones that don't make it long enough to make that decision. It doesn't seem to be addressed here. But that's what an Anabaptist is. Not anti-Baptist, but Anna, A-N-A. Anabaptist. You know, that might be a good drag queen name. I can see it now. It would only go over well in the South or perhaps West Virginia. Anabaptist. Doing midnight train to Georgia. He received an honorary... I'm really getting worse and worse in my old age. Honorary doctorate from Oral Roberts University. And he has served on the Oral Roberts University Board of Regents. Now, in 1960, Hagee married his first wife. Ooh. Our D-I-V-O-R-C-E became final today. They had a couple of children, and he founded Trinity Church in San Antonio, Texas. Well, and honey, trust me, this is something that you do not want to do in a southern church. He married his second wife, a member of the congregation. 12 years younger. In other words, he traded in wifey on a younger model and plucked her from the congregation. Oh, my stars, you just do not want to do that down south. That, well, I suppose anywhere it would cause quite a scandal, but the nerve, snatching up a younger woman from the congregation and ditching the old lady. What a jackass. Well, anyway, due to the bylaws of the Assembly of God denomination, he could no longer be ordained or licensed within the congregation. He was defrocked for doing that. Now, let me explain. I happen to know a little thing about the Assembly of God. In the Assembly of God, you can get divorced as many, many, many times as you like before you are saved. But once you're saved, you know, mark of the saved. Once you're saved, though, and you have confessed Jesus Christ as your Savior, no more divorces for you. No, no more. So by already being a minister in the Assembly of God, then in fact he must have been saved. So this act of woman snatching, young woman snatching from the pews, was a strict no-no. So he was kicked out of the church. So what does a good Christian do when a good Christian is kicked out of the Assembly of God for reasons that are quite clearly spelled out in the Assembly of God bylaws and operating procedures? It was not a secret. It wasn't something that they made up just for him. It's common established procedure. What do you do? Well, you sue, of course. So Hagee and the Trollop, the 12 years younger Trollop, I think his ex-wife calls her the hoe. Anyway, he and his new hoe sued the Assembly of God for millions and millions and millions of dollars for, get this, defamation of character. Now, it wasn't so much the Assembly of God that was defaming his character, it was the outrage and the outright stunned shock of the flock when the horny old Hagee snatched himself a pretty little tart out of the pew and ditched the old lady. Oh, there was talk. The telephone lines were a-burning up there in Texas. Did you see what? Wonder how long that's been going on. Yes, Lord, people talk, they talk. So what do you do when the congregation talks? You sue the denomination. These people, well, you already know. So I'm sure you have no problem with what I'm saying. We've heard it. We all have. This is an established pattern, folks. So after suing for millions and millions of dollars, he and his younger wife, I'll refer to her by name now. Her name is Diana rather than the tart. But I think his ex-wife still calls her the hoe. Hagee is the associate pastor of Cornerstone Church, which is, of course, another independent. Now, immediately after resigning his first pastor at Trinity Church, he founded Castle Hills Academy, which is later known as Church of Castle Hills. Trinity Church, by the way, is located about 8 miles from Hagee's Cornerstone Church on the very same stretch of highway in San Antonio. So you know his ex-wife drove by that church on the way to Trinity. Go in, that slut. Oh, Lord. Hagee has written a number of best-selling books and is a Southern Gospel recording star. Let's talk about some of those books. I have a little list here somewhere. I'm pretty sure I pulled that out, so I'll have that handy. Let's see what I did. Well, it'll come up. It's in this stack somewhere. We'll have the list of his books. They're just amazing. All sorts of, well, you'll see. So, Hagee is not into what's called replacement theology. Now, he has denounced it and stomped all over it. This is basically chapters 9 through 11 of the book of Romans, and it teaches that Jews have a continuing favor with God by grace. And as a people of the covenant, they do not require a belief in Jesus Christ for their salvation. which is probably very good news for the Jews, because they probably don't want anyone like Hagee knocking on their doors. So he believes the Bible commands Christians to support Israel and the Jewish people, but he is not a believer that Jews have to be converted. Now, he has some pretty controversial opinions about Israel and Gaza and the West Bank. Mind you now, John McCain sought him out. The territory of what is now Israel, Gaza and the West Bank, it was, was that back before World War I? It was ruled by the Ottomans, the Turks, prior to World War I. And after that, it was controlled by the British, and then later got partitioned under the United Nations into separate states. That was a United Nations mandate. Hagee argues that the land does not belong to Arabs, and that the name Palestine, which is, of course, derived from the old ancient name Philistines, that the name Palestine was imposed by the Roman emperor way back in the day when they had emperors, to punish the Jews for their revolt against Rome. So Hagee maintains there's no Palestine language, there's no historic Palestine nation, and that most people identifying as Palestinians immigrated from other Arab states. He supports the American-Israeli preemptive military strike on Iran, and of course is a darling of the conservative movement. Some of the things he has to say, well, I'll give you an idea here. J.K. Rowling, he says that is contemporary witchcraft and raises hell that the teachers are able to talk about that and tell their students to read that in public schools, but they can't read the Ten Commandments that are on the wall of the schoolroom. Well, gee, I don't know many schoolrooms that have it. Anyway, we have a lot of audio. So as we go through this story, I'm going to give you some of the audio clips. There's just a bunch of them up at the studio. And we just talked about the Gaza and the West Bank. Bob, if you would, run the clip called Israel.
To give up more land for peace. Joel 3:2 says, any nation that tries to get Israel to divide my land, I will bring it into judgment. I want those of you in the State Department and in government in Washington to hear this. If America does not stop pressuring Israel to give up land, I believe that God will bring this nation into judgment, because I believe what this book says. And if God brings this nation into judgment, he will very likely release the terrorists that you've already let get here through the ridiculous immigration policy you refuse to stop. And this nation is going to go through a bloodbath that you have permitted because of what you have done.
I was pleased to have the endorsement of Pastor John Hagee yesterday.
You know, it's interesting that Mr. Hagee says that God is going to use these terrorists that are already in the country, but the only reason that God can use these terrorists against us is because we let them in because of our stupid policies of immigration. So it just seems odd that, you know, God couldn't provide his own terrorists should he need them in that contingency, but it's our fault that we let them in. I found the book list, by the way. He's written The Invasion of the Demons, Final Dawn Over Jerusalem, God's Two-Minute Warning, Attack on New York, Jerusalem, The Role of Terrorism in the Latter Days. He's also written fiction, one called Devil's Island. One wonders at the wisdom of a pastor writing a book about Devil's Island. He's also, for profit, decided to get into self-help and motivational books. He wrote The Life Study Plan, God's Keys to Personal Success, another one, The Seven Secrets, Unlocking Genuine Greatness. And another, Life Lessons to Live By, 52 Weeks of God's Keys to Personal Success, available in a Christian store near you. And, of course, there are many other titles. This one stands out, What Every Man Wants in a Woman. Well, you know, to do the dishes and keep your mouth shut and be a sex slave is probably the way he reads it, being a literalist of the Bible. And What Every Woman Wants in a Man, Death Certificate. I'm sorry. Don't really believe that, but I just cannot resist some of these things. Let's see. He also denounces abortion for any reason. If the mother's dying, that's just too damn bad. And he is, of course, extremely clear about his stand on homosexuality. Bob, run the homosexuality audio clip, please.
We have worshipped other gods and call it multiculturalism. We have endorsed sodomy and call it an alternative lifestyle. It is not an alternative lifestyle. It was an abomination. It is an abomination. It will always be an abomination. It will never, ever be right. I don't care how many gay pride parades you have, how many polls you have, how many physicians you come out, how many studies you produce. It is sin and always will be a sin.
Yeah, when they say, by the way, this is spoken in this huge, ultra-modern, mega, multimedia, baptismal in the wall, white, pearly white walls, to smiling folks who applaud between each and every segment. He speaks like Bush, except his sound clips are a little bit longer, and then there is applause between each one. By the way, Bob pointed out in production chat, you know, Bob is quite a scholar. There's not a whole lot that Bob can come up with the most interesting details that he knows. He goes back to the 9th century B.C., and Bob says that the Assyrians called the region Palestum, and which we're getting back to the word Palestine we used earlier. He's saying there's no such thing as Palestine. Well, actually, that sort of, the way Bob puts it to a lie, all of Hagee's bullshit, because in any case, the Assyrians called the region Palestum. So as long as we're on the homosexuality bit, let's run the Boy Scouts bit, too. Let's hit the Boy Scouts part.
It has filled the rape crisis centers. It has filled mental hospitals. It has filled the singles bars and penitentiaries of the United States and all of the roster of guests on these brainless New York talk shows. America has become a pagan society, and we are in a moral, emotional, spiritual freefall. When a school teacher cannot refer to the Ten Commandments on the wall, but can command your child to read Harry Potter, which is nothing but a precursor of witchcraft, we're going in the wrong direction here. This is not intelligence. We are embracing the era of darkness. When the Boy Scouts of America are censored and penalized for refusing to accept homosexual scout leaders, we are a pagan nation where we're rebirthing Sodom and Gomorrah. God hasn't changed his opinion because the news media and politicians are carping for something. It doesn't mean God is for it. If God is opposed to it, we're still opposed to it because we're walking in the way of the Lord.
I know Bob was cringing. Bob cringes, and I cringe when we hear the word God pronounced it. God! It's always very disturbing. I think both Bob and I have heard that one too many times. And by the way, the audience, that the congregation that he's presenting this to, is not a bunch of blue-haired old ladies and broken-down men on canes. These are young families, obviously from the suburbs, some blue-collar, lots of children. It is packed wall to wall. This is a 19,000 member church, and I would say 18,000 of them were there that day. Very, very, well, let's just say he was talking to the voters. You get it now? Like McCain might want to cuddle up to him. Let me give you some more flavor. Let me give you some additional flavor of Mr. Hagee, the man that John McCain sought out. Bob, run Starve, please.
We've rewarded laziness and called it welfare. You no longer look to God, you look for a check in the mail. In the Bible says the man that does not work should not eat. I still think that ought to be the law in the United States of America. If you don't want to get up off your blessed assurance and go to work, starve! I don't care! Starve! I don't feel sorry for you. Go to work!
Starve! You old blue-haired granny in the retirement home, get off your ass and go to work. Starve! Do you see the Republicans are courting him? It's the disassembly, the reduction of the United States government and its ability to help people with programs like Social Security and Medicare are being eroded by these people. And the starve version of the Christian method and message is, of course, an abomination, at least in my sight. Starve! I don't care, he says. starve to his parishioners who are paying $4 and $5 for a gallon of gas. Well, why not go on for a bit and let's give you an example of what he thinks of Catholics. Now, when he talks about Catholics, he has full-sized figures on the stage, well, you'd say it would be like a mannequin, but not a mannequin. They're custom designed for the church. It's like a spirit woman sitting on top of a lion with three heads and flames coming out of its mouth, holding a cup in its hand, and she is the whore and she is the Catholic Church. Let's just hear what Mr. Hagee has to say about the Catholics. Catholic final, Bob.
John McCain will be a strong, courageous, and effective leader from the first day he steps into the Oval Office.
Some Catholic leaders are furious that John McCain has accepted the endorsement of televangelist John Hagee, who they say has a long history of vicious attacks on their church.
The president of the Catholic League, Bill Donahue, says Hagee regularly impugns the Catholic Church, calling it the, quote, great whore and a false cult system.
This thing is out of bounds, and this is why McCain has to look at this. It's the totality of what the man stands for. He's been bashing Catholicism for decades and making a mountain of money over it.
This is the great whore of Revelation 17. This is the Antichrist system. This is the apostate church. In this cup, if you will read it in the book of Revelation, is the blood of the saints. This is talking principally about the blood of the Jewish people. Where? From the Crusades that happened back here. From the Spanish Inquisition, from the Holocaust. When Adolf Hitler came to power, he said, I'm not going to do anything in my lifetime that hasn't been done by the Roman Church for the past 800 years. I'm only going to do it on a greater scale and more efficiently. And he certainly has done just exactly that. God has said, I gave you the time to repent, but you did not. You, this false cult system that was born in Genesis 10 and progressed through Israel and became Baal worship, God says the day is going to come when I'm going to cause this beast to devour this apostate system. So you can say very clearly that while the church is in heaven, this false religious system is going to be totally devoured by the Antichrist.
I'm very honored by Pastor John Hagee's endorsement today.
Is he ready to embrace someone who calls the Catholic religion a great whore?
Well, I think John McCain's statement that he put out from the campaign after the question was raised speaks for itself. And I think that many times people who endorse someone are not in total agreement with them on every issue. That's the case with most people.
John McCain will be a strong, courageous, and effective leader from the first day he steps into the Oval Office.
I'm very honored by Pastor John Hagee's endorsement today.
What do you think so far, kids? You're beginning to see what's going on here? The Catholic League for Civil and Religious Rights President William Donahue has issued a statement saying that McCain's ties to Hagee says now that he's secured the Republican nomination for president and received the endorsement of Bush, McCain now embarks on a series of fundraising events. When he meets with Catholics, he's going to be asked about his ties to Hagee, and he should be asked about whether he approves of comments like the ones that Hagee makes, a godless theology of hate that no one dared to stop for 1,000 years, produced from a harvest of hate. He clearly identifies the Catholic Church in his books also as, and I quote, spawning a theology of hate. Now, I had to laugh. Bill Moyer says, there's so many good evangelical leaders in this country. James Dobson and Richard Land and Tony Perkins, and none of them have ever insulted Catholicism. Oh, Lord, bring me a barf bag. Yeah, so many good evangelical leaders. In his book, Jerusalem Countdown, he claims that Adolf Hitler's anti-Semitism was derived especially from his Catholic background, Hitler's background, that is. And he also says that the Roman Catholic Church plunged the world into the Dark Ages and allowed for crusaders to rape, murder with impunity, and call Jews to be treated as Christ killers. Now, all of these things, in fact, many of his statements are, of course, made in such a way as to be divisive, and to plunge wedges between religions and all of the faiths. Now, I'm not going to go into a discussion of the Catholic Church in the Dark Ages. It's not germane to the conversation, but what is germane is he is framing this in such a way as the Christian right likes it. We're right, everybody else is wrong, and it's the damn Jews and the damn Catholics and the Hindus that we need to bring under our control, and bring them Jesus. You're going to love this. He said in March 2008, he said, "I've learned that some have accused me of referring to the Catholic Church as the great whore of Revelations." Well, he does it constantly. You just heard it. "This is a serious misinterpretation of my words, misinterpretation of plain common English. When I refer to the great whore, I'm referring to the apostate church, namely Christians who embrace a false cult system." Says he's going to rewrite a chapter of the book that gives the wrong impression that he has ever said that the Catholic Church is a great whore, but he hasn't done it yet. He says that Donahue rejects Hagee's. Donahue is the Catholic League fellow. He completely rejects it says that what Hagee says is disingenuous, that anti-Catholic Protestants have long labeled the Catholic Church as the great whore. It's common knowledge, and no amount of spin is going to change that. And no one who knows anything about the term would suggest otherwise. And furthermore, Hagee did identify the great whore of Babylon as being Rome and the Roman Catholic Church. Hagee tries to repel these charges by saying that he's not anti-Catholic on the grounds my church runs a social service center that serves a largely Catholic constituency. Yes, my fundamentalist church is taking care of the poor, starving, misled Catholics. You know, let's just insult the Catholics on every level. Let's say they don't take care of their own, and they're the great whore. And it's not just the Catholic Church. The Jewish community is up in arms about his anti-Semitism. Rabbi Yoffe, he's a Jewish leader, says he's criticized Hagee for being extremist on Israeli policy and for disparaging all faiths, including Islam and the Roman Catholic. Bob, let's let's run the clip called Death. It's a short clip. Please run Death.
Death is better than compromise. Death is better than compromise. What are you willing to put your life on the line for? The Bible says in the book of Revelation about the New Testament saints, they love not their lives unto the death. Does that describe the 21st century church in America? I think not. Jesus said, if any man comes after me, and he's not willing to forsake his father, and he's not willing to forsake his mother, he cannot be my disciple. Think about that.
Sounds like the religious extremists that we're all up in arms about. Sounds a lot like the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. By the way, Al-Qaeda means the database. To translate that for you, it's just a list of people. The database, it sounds like the database. Ignore your mother and your father. Leave your mother and your father. Obey only me. Now, whether or not he's presenting that in the way Scripture would have it presented is of course, a matter of opinion. All faith is. But I submit to you that he is rousing up the knuckle-dragging middle class in his congregation to follow him. This is the tactic that they normally use. He said on the National Public Radio's Fresh Air, he was discussing Islam. He said, those who live by the Quran have a scriptural mandate to kill Christians and Jews. It teaches it very clearly. And then he proceeds to characterize the military threat posed by those who follow Islamic scripture. He says there are 1.3 billion people who follow the Islamic faith. Be afraid, be very afraid. So if you're saying that there's only 15% that want to come to America and crush it, you're talking about 200 million people. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Hate theology. Hate theology. And certainly we don't want to leave Mr. Hagee without talking about the homosexuals and the storms that hit New Orleans. Bob, if you'd run New Orleans, please.
Do you still think that Katrina is punishment from God for a society that's becoming like Sodom and Gomorrah?
All hurricanes are acts of God because God controls the heavens. I believe that New Orleans had a level of sin that was offensive to God, and they were recipients of the judgment of God for that. The newspaper carried the story in our local area that was not carried nationally, that there was to be a homosexual parade there on the Monday that the Katrina came. And the promise of that parade was that it was going to reach a level of sexuality never demonstrated before in any of the other gay pride parades. So I believe that the judgment of God is a very real thing. And I believe that the Hurricane Katrina was, in fact, the judgment of God against the city of New Orleans.
You think that the whole city was punished because of things like the forthcoming Gay Pride Parade?
This is true. All of the city was punished because of the sin that happened there in that city.
When he endorses me, it does not mean that I embrace everything that he stands for and believes in.
Ah, did we hear Mr. McCain turning down the volume just a tad? Is the fundamentalist knuckle-dragger Hagee getting a little too hot for your kitchen, sir? No, he doesn't necessarily believe a word of it. It's not about faith, it's about power. It is because this man owns... How many television stations? Do I have to go back and pull the data? Wasn't it 60 television stations? And I've lost count of the number of networks, the number of satellites available in 99 million homes and everywhere from the United States to Africa. Could it be access? Could it be access? Could it be the worst kind of pandering? And could it be that the forefathers put in a separation of church and state for a very damned good reason? It's happening again, folks. He's just reassured the fundamentalists. You know, it was Hagee that got their attention because Hagee endorsed him. And now, of course, Hagee wants to be the liaison to the White House, as Dobson has been. You see, Dobson is sniffing, is turning up his nose over Hagee's because Dobson is the power center. Hagee is a rising fundamentalist, a brand new fundamentalist for a brand new president. Out with Focus on the Family, out with George Bush, in with Hagee. And like the Bible says about cleaning your house, you get rid of the evil spirit. What was it? The verse says, I think seven come back and seven return, and they're all worse than the one you threw out. Well, I think we may be seeing a taste of that. And there's more. Hagee's received over $1.25 million in total compensation for his position as CEO of the TEHE, Nonprofit Corporational Global Evangelism Television. This made him the highest paid televangelist in 2001. Imagine that. You think John McCain looked up the money? You know, the more money you get, the more people you got, you know, the more suckers. I think John McCain might have looked up to see who is the wealthiest televangelist and went, come on down. The San Antonio Express News reported that in 2001 alone, John Hagee received over $1.25 million in compensation, making him the highest paid evangelical televangelist. He received almost $1 million in compensation for his work at GETV, which amounted to approximately 16 hours a week of work. Now, the board of directors of GETV, which he pays them, the board of directors is, okay, John Hagee himself, his wife, otherwise known as That Bitch, by Hagee's first wife, Hagee himself, That Bitch, the illegitimate son of the bitch, and a Cornerstone Church member. Imagine that. They determine Hagee's salary. He claims that he works 80-hour weeks because he's writing books and singing songs, much like the ones Bob played earlier, and meeting with international dignitaries. Does this sound like George Bush to you? You could almost quote it verbatim as something Bush said. And meeting with international dignitaries and important stuff and answering calls to preach the Word of God. And John Hagee says, and I quote, I deserve every dime I'm getting. And other observers, actually including many evangelicals, criticize Hagee's handling of his finances. His combined pay for both the donor-supported ministries and his separate church ministries are well over $1 million, well over the $1.25 million. There's no figure here. Yeah. See, he's got the little blue-haired ladies in the church, you know, dipping in the church, and he's got a separate for-profit. Anyway, he says he's certain that his finances meet the requirements of the IRS because he hired tax lawyers and he hired accountants to make sure his books complied with the tax laws. And he said, and I quote, we want a set of books so that when the IRS comes in here, the books looks like those people, they'll just say, this place is clean. Gee, Hagee, what about the first set of books? Is this a new set of books? We want a set of books that when the IRS comes in here and looks, they'll say those people are clean. Well, I guess he's referring to the new set of books. If you already have a good set of books, you wouldn't want a new one, would you, Mr. Hagee? Because I'm waiting for the day IRS is going to come back and look at our books. Oh, my stars. In 04, Hagee re-registered GETV as a church. As a church, mind you, the television station is now registered as a church under the name Grace Church of San Antonio and became exempt from filing returns with the IRS. Imagine that. And then a further reorganization in July of 06 moved all assets into Cornerstone Church. Do you see now why Mr. Hagee needs John McCain? Could it be perhaps so that Mr. McCain would say to the IRS, let's just not get into this? Could it be that he needs a little protection from the top? Oh, I'm sure that the highly ethical Republican Party, headed by Mr. John McSame, the man who paws George Bush and licks like a starving cow on Bush's face. Lord have mercy. Then we have a statement from McCain saying, I don't want his endorsement to suggest that I in turn agree with his views. And this following him being on the stage beaming as Hagee and the repeated statements, we played them. We attacked them on the end of the audio clip. So I'm so proud to have Hagee's endorsement. So proud. There's one statement he made that I have to agree with, though. You know, there's one statement. I will read it to you. I think you'll get a laugh at it. He said once, and I quote, Jesus did not come to the earth to start 285 squabbling denominations. Oh, Lord. I happen to agree with that. But I certainly don't think that I would want to join your denomination out of the 285 squabbling denominations that he's pointing out here. Now, there's a fellow, Bruce Wilson, by the way, who actually has attended a Hagee service, and this is from an entirely different news source. And he writes about what goes on in the Hagee services. And it was this fellow, Bruce Wilson, who describes that he uses oversized life images of harlots riding on multi-headed tigers, representing the whore of Babylon, which is to say the Catholic Church. He also refers to the Catholic Church as the apostate church. He says about a half of the people, he means thousands of people here, about half the men and about half the women are writhing around, and they're either play puking, he calls it play puking, or screaming. And you see, and I've been to services like this. They have different congregations call them different things. They'll call them prayer assistants or prayer partners. This particular congregation, Hagee calls them life coaches. These people run around in the audience or the cathedral or whatever you want to call it, offering to pray with people or assist them if they are being enraptured by the Holy Spirit, which is normally comes on from the huge subwoofers located in the wall, but that's a whole different story. He said, and mind you, these people are giving out barf bags in case you become so wrapped up in the Spirit you have to throw up. And so the man who is attending, this fellow, Bruce Bolt, who's attending Hagee's service, you know, he wanted to play along, and so he raised his hand, and one of the life coaches came running over, and Bruce Wilson says, "Need a bag," you know, like he was about need a bag. So the life coach handed him a bag, and Bruce proceeded to put his mouth in it as if he was throwing up in the bag. And I kid you not, this is what Bruce says, that the life coaches began saying, "I cast out the demon of handwriting analysis." Apparently, Hagee had got them all worked up about some case involving handwriting analysis and how, no doubt, the devil used it in such a way as to be evil. "In the name of Jesus, I cast out the demon of handwriting analysis." You see, it had to be the demon of handwriting analysis who is causing this poor man to need a barf bag. And the fellow says, "Handwriting analysis, you know, in his own mind." He jammed the bag over his mouth and was laughing and coughing. And then he, you know, was just in total disbelief. And then the prayer coach, what did he say? What did the life coach is there? He screamed, "I cast out the demon of the intellect. I cast out the demon of anal fissures." Oh, my star. No, anal fissures are not very old, no longer manufactured anymore loudspeakers. No, anal fissures in the sense of, well, I suppose that, you know, they're healing some people there, and I guess that this fellow Bruce happened to be the one with anal fissures. And fissures. Oh, my God in heaven. Anal fissures. It's all true. Let's see. At least according to that fellow, there's no reason why he would lie. He points out later in the article, you know, with all these demons, he says, why not demons of the ingrown toenail and demons of flatulence? Demons of constipation, I cast them out. Demons of diarrhea. Demons of leather fetishism. Demons of antique collecting. Oh, Lord, anal fissures. It's the Fisher anal version. 12-inch loudspeaker designed to rock your world. Is it live or is it Analex? I'm really just way out of control. But, you know, it's hard. It is hard to spend an entire afternoon reading this crap and editing this audio crap
and putting it together isn't actually spending the time to send it to the studio and explain to Bob the names of the, well, you know, Bob, I don't have to explain it to Bob. I mean, but, you know, to communicate it to Bob that these are the clips you're going to use in this section for this crap. We cannot go through another 4 years or 8 years of this mess. We just cannot do it. We will have a new president called John McCain, who is identical to Bush in every way, and a millionaire, and in the pockets of all the same people that Bush is in the pockets of, and will continue to honor any pardons and that Bush, and he will continue to. He's already said clearly he's going to continue to appoint Scalitos and all the, you know, the vermin to the Supreme Court. We'll have a brand new Antichrist, Mr. John Hagee, to replace. No, because we can't have the same evangelist with the new president. We have to have a brand new evangelist representing even a dirtier flavor of evangelical thought. One who's very rich and has lots and lots of TV stations and a huge church. We want a set of books so that when the IRS comes, they'll look and say, those people are clean. Life-size harlots with multi-headed tigers. God wiping out New Orleans. You know, even the fundamentalists are about to, you know, start to choke on that one. So anyway, that's my story about John McCain and Hagee and his second wife, also known as the bitch, and his son, who is also on the board, also known as the little bastard. These are terms that his first wife uses, I'm quite sure. And about the pastor who sued the Assembly of God, because the Assembly of God had a rule that he couldn't be divorced after he's been saved. You know, it's staggering in its proportion that, you know, but, you know, I have to let go of it now because we've done that. We've been through that particular cesspool, and that's a cesspool that we just waded through. And there will be more about that. You know, we're all of the hosts in the horn will all be involved in it. Whew. Anyway, I'm glad I got that off my chest. All afternoon. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about something else. I'll tell you what, I've been rambling for an hour. Let's just take a completely different tact. Let's go and take ourselves a little break, and then we'll come back with some more fun stories. The toll-free line, by the way, is 877 number 4 head-on. You can call in after the track we're going to run as we go to break, and that's also 877-443-2360. We're going to run a song that's called Life at the Outpost. Now, this was released in 1979 by the Scat Brothers, and this is not a remix. This is from the 12-inch original, Life at the Outpost, or it may have been a 7-inch, but it's the original version. And it comes to mind, Glenn Rivera recently did this track to the video of, Bob will remind me and I'll tell you later. It was a movie you guys were talking about last night with the Titwillow lady. And it's true. Bob, what was the name of that movie? Anyway, he set Life at the Outpost to Blazing Saddles. Thank you, Bob. I can always depend on you for an answer. Glenn recently did a video remix that he set this particular song to, Life at the Outpost. It's a major hoot. So we'll go to break with that. When we come back, we'll do some more. And so here's Life at the Outpost.
Shoot 'em up.
riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential. A man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And I'm back, riding across the nation on a horse named Strictly Confidential that can even fly across the ocean and talk to people in foreign lands. Imagine that. The beauty of the internets. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. Rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the mail during the breaks. And, boy, I feel like the song from Rocky Horror Picture Show after having done that McCain piece. Touch me. I want to feel dirty. What an icky story. But anyway, so that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Huge announcement today. Huge. In fact, it's an announcement about a story that I hadn't gotten to yet. So I now have two totally separate stories in my hand about the same thing. A late-night court filing by the White House on Monday revealed that official administration emails about the run-up to the invasion of Iraq and the occupation may never be recoverable. Well, duh. It seems to me that we sort of told you guys that months and months and months ago. You know, I understand the dismay of people who don't listen to that on Radio Network, but, you know, I'm not going to say I told you so, but kids, I told you this a long time ago. Oh, and even still are saying may never be recovered. Never, ever in a million years will it be recovered. Whistleblowers are accusing the White House of destroying email records from their internal servers, and the Bush administration disputes it, saying that the emails were just stored incorrectly. Well, George, was the data written vertically on the drive and it should have been written horizontally? Did you happen to store the drives next to some huge electromagnetic device like the Medusa device that Rocky Horror used? Was that the problem? Were the emails not spell checked before they were stored? They just were stored incorrectly. Lord have mercy. The storage system came under harsh criticism from former employees who called it primitive, which we discussed here prior on the network. When you're using one single backup tape and overriding it every day, you tend to lose all the way. You tend to lose. There's no history. It's not like you could restore from last month or last year. You're supposed to keep these things. Anyway, the former employees said that the backup system had deep security flaws and that it would inevitably lead to the destruction, read that, permanent destruction of the ARMS system. Why is it that they can never think of any initials that ARMS means Automatic Records Management System? ARMS. Gee, in my world, we just call it backup. And apparently your ARMS systems is... Oh, don't make me cuss. I so am reduced to just pure profanity when I read things like this. Your ARMS system is so full of... ARMS, oh, like that makes it big and tough. The ARMS system was actually put into place before the Bush administration, and then the Bush administration continued to dismantle it as time went by, and we know that presidents were responsible for preserving historical records. The judge's order... to the White House indicates that reveals that no emails were saved between March 1, 03 and May 22nd, 03. The Office of Administration is preserving 438 disaster recovery backup tapes that were written between March 1, 03 and September 30, 03. And of those 438 tapes, the earliest date on which the data was written is May 23. In other words,
The time period that is the most critical historically regarding the Bush administration, the invasion of Iraq, the run-up to it, the lies, the diplomatic playing around, the jockeying, the trying to rally the United Nations, lying to us, also the planning for Jo Wilson's outing her as a CIA representative, or a, was she CIA or was she NSA? The lying about the weapons of mass destruction, all those, the war on terror section is just, it's managed to just poof, it's all gone. All gone. Well, gee, when you don't, Lord have mercy. The Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington says we've likely lost for all time a critical piece of our nation's history. And the Bush administration previously revealed that backup tapes of the period of September 30 through October 06-03 were destroyed. And, of course, that period of time begins the Department of Justice investigation into the outing of Valerie Plame Wilson. The White House has disclosed that many of the computer hard drives would have contained email records for forensic data, but they were, imagine this, physically destroyed as part of a, what the White House calls, a refresh program undertaken by the White House to replace older computers. You can be damn sure that all the new computers came from Dell, by the way. Dell being fanatically Republican enough to have financed $250,000 of the coronation. To Earth folks, that would be the Bush inauguration. Yes, Dell just gave it to the out of the goodness of their hearts for his second coronation. The suggestion to examine all of the workstations came, so then the White House had to admit to recycling or taping over the emergency backups that contained email. This was systematic, absolutely systematic. You see, here's kind of how it worked as closely as we can come to it. When the Bush administration took office, it decided to replace the Lotus Notes-based email system that was used under Clinton. Now, you know, Lotus has been floundering for quite a while. I think it's gone. You can find, you know, Lotus software in the bargain bin. If you find it on eBay for $1 a CD, brand new software, never registered if you want it. Lotus became irrelevant quite a little while ago. But nonetheless, you know, Lotus was hanging on and, you know, it was part of IBM. IBM bought Lotus. In fact, that's when, don't want to go into all that. But anyway, the Clinton administration was using a Lotus Notes-based email system. And the Bush administration decided to replace it with Microsoft's Outlook as the client and Microsoft Exchange as the server, which is my side of the fence. This is what I know about. And, well, guess what, kids? The transition from Lotus email system, which is, you know, has its own database. Let me explain. Email is not stored as a million pieces of individual files, you know, like you'd have a doc files and MP3 files. I mean, it's not stored as individual files. They're stored in one great big fat file called the database. It is a database that has inside of it all of the attachments. It knows which piece of mail the attachments are connected to. It knows which piece of mail goes to which recipient. It knows which piece of mail to forward it to, which piece of mail gets the attachment to be forwarded, and which doesn't. It knows everything. It is the backup system. Database knows, or the database knows many things about many things. But let me just assure you that Lotus / IBM, when they wrote their Lotus Notes is named their email program. When they wrote that, they sure as hell were not consulting with Microsoft to be compatible with the Exchange system. Nor was it Microsoft with the Exchange server working with Lotus. In other words, we're talking about fish and bicycles. So the transition from Lotus to Exchange broke the archiving system, the email system. Well, duh! You know, this is, the IT shop here, they're blaming it on the poor IT guys who are probably pulling their hair out saying you're not doing this right. The IT shop did not immediately have a new one to put in its place. Well, gee, it was like, what, almost a year they didn't have a new one to put in its place? So the White House went to a system called journaling, which is, it's a folder that holds copies of emails that, and it's sort of like a PST file, which is everybody can get to and everybody can edit and blah blah blah. So anyway, it says here that that the IT department struggled to get the Lotus backup system to work with Microsoft Exchange. They struggled for months. They tried so hard. They it says here in 2002 and 2003. What? 2 years they attempted to retrofit the Lotus Notes-based archiving system to work with the new Microsoft Exchange email system. But they failed. You know, this is so hysterical to me. All you have to do, fellows, is pick up the phone, call Microsoft. They'll jump all over themselves to talk to the White House. I mean, you're high government. You guys buy a lot of software. And say, gee, fellows, the Lotus Notes system isn't backing up Exchange. And Microsoft will say, well, duh. You need to get backup software that's going to work with Exchange. It's like apples and oranges. It's all email, but it's totally different. And you can pick one of those up. You go to CDW, or you can order email backup systems or server backup systems. And it's not like the White House couldn't afford it. So they're blaming the IT department for working 2 years in an attempt to retrofit an old Lotus Notes-based archiving system, which a simple call to Microsoft would have told him this will never be. This cannot exist in the known universe. Ain't going to happen. When the effort failed, I know what let's do. Let's award a contract. Yes, that's always worked in the past. Let's award a contract to, who'd they pick this time, throw it, Art? Bose Allen Hamilton to design a new system and Unisys to implement it. No, would somebody like to tell me why Bose Allen Hamilton wanted to design a new backup system for perhaps the most popular email server on the planet? There are thousands of companies that write backup software in Hart and build hardware for archiving Exchange. And so, but oh no. Rather than buy one of these proven and stable archival devices, they hired Bose Allen Hamilton to design a new system, and then they chose Unisys to implement it. Lord have mercy. Okay, you know, anything to waste time. You know, see, the more time that passes, the more email is permanently lost. So according to McDivitt, the new system was set up and configured during 2005 and was ready to go live in August of 2006. But imagine this, the White House, the CIO Chief Information Officer Teresa Payton reportedly aborted the project in late 2006, just as it was ready to go live. Imagine that. She cited perceived inadequacies with the system's performance, and she said that its ability to segregate official presidential correspondence from political or personal materials wasn't up to her satisfaction. Well, see, that's what you get when you hire Bose Allen Hamilton to design an entirely new system for a stable, commonly, you know, you can't make this stuff up. And McDivitt, or Dervitt, the woman, the CIO who was concerned about performance and the ability to segregate mail, resigned shortly after. And so now the White House starts working on yet another archive system. Custom. Oh, no, nothing off the shelf, nothing that'll work, nothing that is proven to be reliable, nothing that's backed by a major manufacturer. You know, everybody makes archival systems. HP is one large, and many others. Anyway, guess what, kids? It's looking now that it's looking increasingly unlikely that this new system that's being built from scratch will be operational before the end of the administration. Imagine that. The White House lacks intentionally with the immediate beginning of the disabling and taking apart, disassembling of the email systems when the Bush administration took over. They lack completely any operational backup system and will continue to lack an automated backup system throughout the occupation of the White House. Now, There's many more details I could glaze your eyes over. You know, performance analyst, 700 days emails missing, 12 days in which all emails from the president's office was missing, 16 days when all emails from the vice president's office are missing. The White House Office of Administration has estimated that between 2003 and 2005, and by the way, the clock's still ticking, we still have no archive system, just between 2003 and 2005, at least 5 million emails have been lost. Poof. Now, some of them may be recoverable from the backup tapes, but because there was no logging procedure for the backup tapes, and there's no way to be sure all the emails are there, or even to sort them in any way that is dedicated to an email account. In any case, the failure to keep this detailed records is very serious. Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald's been looking for the emails from Cheney's office since October 2003. That was more than a few days ago. Been unable to produce the emails from the, quote, journaling archive system, which is called ad hoc. It's not really archiving. Just trust me on that. Journaling. We're going to keep a journal. Gee, why don't you just buy a damn archive system? Why keep a journal? Because we're the White House. So they were trying to retrieve the emails from the desktop computers, but due to the renewal process, they've been replaced and the hard drives physically destroyed because they were White House computers, so they weren't put on on eBay as a used system. They were destroyed. All gone. And so if that's not bad enough, there's also evidence that senior Bush administration officials have taken to using the non-government accounts, which we've talked about, to pass their emails outside of the White House system, just in case, maybe the kludged-together archive system might be working that day. Just in case, we'll send the really bad stuff on an outside of the White House system. The Republican National Committee has a policy of deleting emails after 30 days. This is the account that the mails were sent on. And, of course, the administration is stonewalling. The parties of both sides, inside and out government, are pressuring the Bush administration to restore those emails, but they cannot be restored. And to implement a real archival system like the one that existed during the Clinton years, but ain't going to happen during this administration. Lord have mercy. Let's see. Anyway, enough of that. There's only so much of this administration to take on any given night. And I'm just here. I want to tell you this little story. And by the way, we're going to do a gay bar across the street segment. Tonight is Mr. Jerry Bonham. We'll be running him at some point shortly after 10:30. He's doing a black party. Great job. Jerry Bonham is always a great. He's at jerrybonham.com, JerryBonham. But I want to tell you this story first. This is from Pam's house blend. It's priceless, the way she put it. The beginning starts with the actual news report. I believe it's the Associated Press. A medical examiner must change her autopsy findings to delete any reference that stun guns contributed to the deaths of 3 people involved in confrontations with law enforcement officials. A judge ruled. Friday's decision was a victory for Taser International, which had challenged rulings by the Summit County Medical Examiner, Lisa Kohler, including a case in which 5 sheriff's deputies are charged in the death of a jail inmate who was restrained by the wrists and ankles. And even though he was restrained by the wrists and ankles, he was hit with pepper spray and stun gun. The medical examiner Kohler ruled that the 2006 death of Mark McCullough, Jr., who was only 28 years old, was a homicide and that he died from asphyxiation due to the combined effects of chemical, mechanical, and electrical restraint. Last time I checked, you have to go to med school to become a coroner. This is a trained medical person. This is not somebody they picked up from the Greyhound station. Well, the judge, Ted Schneiderman, doesn't say Republican here, but I'm sure we can put the R after his name. He's a visiting judge, by the way. Visiting Judge Ted Schneiderman. said in his ruling that there were no expert evidences, or has, there was no expert evidence to indicate that taser devices impaired Mr. McCullough's respiration, the 28-year-old. No expert evidence. Gee, you'd think med school would qualify you to do your job as examiner, but the judge says it's more likely that the death was due to a fatal cardiac arrhythmia brought on by severe heart disease. Well, you know, fatal cardiac arrhythmias brought on by severe heart disease is rampant in 28-year-old men. You know, it's just, it's happening all the time. I'm so concerned. I'm glad I'm not 28 anymore. I might fall over dead with a fatal cardiac arrhythmia brought on by severe heart disease. No, the judge says it was not the combined effects of chemical, mechanical, and electrical restraint. Now, the judge, Schneiderman, ordered the medical examiner, Kohler, to rule that McCullough's death was undetermined. We just can't figure out why. See, the judge offers that it was likely a fatal cardiac arrhythmia brought on by severe heart disease. The coroner's already said it's the combined effects of chemical, mechanical, electrical restraint, but the judge now has said that the coroner must rule that the death is undetermined. No doubt the judge has stock in Taser International, and to delete any references from the medical report to homicide. The judge said that references to stun guns contributing to the deaths of two other men also must be deleted from autopsy findings. This is a Dennis Hyde who is only 30 years old. He died after a confrontation with Akron police. And a Richard Holcomb, only 18. You know, it's that severe fatal cardiac arrhythmia that'll get you when you're 18 and 30 and 28. He died the same year. Richard Holcomb, 18, died the same year after being hit with a stun gun by a police officer in a suburban Springfield township. Now, the judge also said, referring to stun guns contributing to the deaths, here we go. And this is what Pam said. This was the wonderful insight that Pam Spaulding had. She says, I don't know why anyone bothers to amass a mountain of student loan debts and to work hard and to study hard and go to medical school and forensic school and become a medical examiner when all you need is a judge's robe to so that you know how people die in police custody. Way to go, Pam. Pam also says the guy died of a heart attack. Those 50,000 volts coursing through his body had absolutely no effect on a pepper-sprayed, fully restrained young man with coronary disease. Anyway, Pam, that was a great insight. Great sight. That's Pam's house blend. Well, we're getting close to the time we're going to start the gay bar across the street. You're probably tired of hearing me ramble on about backup tapes and Lotus Notes and Microsoft Exchange and ministers and what a sordid little, awful, nasty little sordid evening this has been. I hate those people. Can't take them. So let's have a little fun. And as again, it is Mr. Jerry Bonham, who is, he was a fellow who played at Trox's 30th anniversary. He's been on the show. His site is Jerry Bonham, BONHAM.com. And he is running the gay bar across the street this evening. So as we gather up our little coats and our umbrellas, our pocketbooks, our boas, and as we wander across the street to the little gay bar, we're going to have a good time.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.